Hello, sex fans, and welcome back. Today is Monday, November 19th, 2012, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge. And I'm your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. Today's show, for the Erotic Mind series, brings back KJB and Shauna Germain. These two marvelous authors are here again this week to continue the discussion we began last week about edgy BDSM erotica and why the good stuff is so much better for you than the schlock. And to prove this, Kay will treat us to a steamy reading from her work, Not Her Type. You won't want to miss this, sex fans. But wait! You didn't miss part one of this conversation, did you? Well, not to worry if you did, because you can find it and all of my podcasts in the podcast archive on my site, drdicksexadvice.com. All you got to do is use the search function in the header, type in podcast number 354, and presto! But don't forget to use the pound sign when you do your search. For more of Kay, visit her website kjb.me.uk, and for more of Shauna, check out her website shaunagermain.com. They're both on Facebook and Twitter too, and I'll put all of these links in today's podcast posting on my site drdicksexadvice.com. Today's program is once again brought to you by Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library. You know, even though I get tons of email from folks looking for my advice, I can only respond to a limited number of inquiries at any given time. But that doesn't mean that I don't care about everyone who writes in. I do. That's why I've set up the How-To Video Library. You'll find a link to this great resource right there on the front page of drdicksexadvice.com. Look for the Video Library tab in the header. The video library is the go-to place for all of you who have sexual performance questions. You'll be able to watch all kinds of deliciously entertaining, delightfully enriching, and oh-so-informative videos right from the comfort of your own home. And remember, a portion of the money you spend at Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library, educating, enriching, and entertaining yourself, comes back to us as support for these marvelous shows. Okay, so knock yourself out. Now, on with the show. Kay and Shauna, welcome back to part two of our conversation for the Erotic Mind show. We are talking about the 50 Shades of Grey phenomenon, and the antidote for that, which is really good and literary and excellently written erotica. One of the things that I've recognized in a lot of the reviews that I saw for the book, and even in my conversations with a bunch of people, they really don't have any sense of history about this genre, edgy erotica. Either one of you care to weigh in and with a little bit of a historical perspective?
Do you want me to take? I don't mind. I can. You'll have to shut me up. I could talk for like a week.
we'll pull the plug then. How's that?
I'm potted, very potted. It's a little bit like we were saying last time. A number of people that think this is a very new thing is one of the frustrating things. Or perhaps it's good. Perhaps it's good that however late they've come to it, they have found us.
Right.
But if you want to go back to the beginning, then the Old Testament's going to take a little bit of beating.
Yes, just enough. Oi, oi,
oi. The Song of Songs, frankly, lie down, damp tissue, the ancient Greeks just loved their erotica. There is a lot of ancient Greek literary, very high class erotica. And all the way through
pornography
history.
Pornography from, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, there's loads of it. I mean, ancient world is littered, And it wasn't viewed in quite the same way. I mean, you know, it wasn't like under the table, right, under the counter. Yeah, it was. And then, I mean, I can pick out various things all through history. One that always amuses me is the Italian book that was written in, 1353 it was, the Decameron, which I forgive my pronunciation, which was a detailed account of the sexual exploits of monks and nuns.
Was just complete fiction.
Absolutely. Complete fiction. I mean, I think it was actually complete fiction, this particular case. But it was considered so risque that right up until 1958, copies were being confiscated.
Right.
But from 1353 to 1958, you know, it was still considered really bad. But I mean, the Victorians, obviously, full of secret pornography and erotica. But I got to thinking, not just about the history of erotica itself, but the sort of the splash that has happened with 50 Shades. I just wondered, had that ever happened before? And it has happened before. This almost same sort of phenomena effect happened in the 17th century. When there was a guy called John Wilmot, who was the Earl of Rochester over here, and he was absolutely notorious for writing lewd, erotic verse and plays. And he was so much the libertine, he wrote a famous poem called A Ramble in St. James's Park, which sounds terribly English and afternoon tea-like, but in fact is all about rape, buggery, incest, you name it. And his name became synonymous with erotica, so much so that a large amount of stuff that was published at that time, they used his name, even though he hadn't written it.
Oh, interesting.
And rather than the grey label, the BDSM label we have now, Rochester was used by publishers as a name to publish books.
No kidding.
Yeah, I was just curious to see if it happened before, and there's nothing new under the sun.
There you go. Anything to add to that, Shauna?
Yeah, sorry, I've gone on.
No, not at all.
No, it's super interesting. And I think that there's a really interesting phenomenon in more recent history, which is that I've noticed that the majority of erotic novels that have really sort of, quote, hit it big have a really similar slant, and that is a submissive woman discovering herself and a dominant man. And if we look at the books, you know, the Sleeping Beauty trilogies, the story of O, Carrie's story, I mean, the majority of books who have sort of risen, if not to the top, then at least to popularity, that have these, quote, subversive topics, often have a really similar storyline in that way. And so I think that it's very fascinating to me that this book, which has a similar storyline and a similar topic to all of those other books that have risen, seems to be following that trend. It's just, I think, in this particular case, with the advent of ebooks especially, it's allowed it to rise much higher than some of those other books with similar topics and slants.
Sure.
So yeah. While we're on the topic, thank you for raising that, by the way, Shauna. While we're on the topic, let's talk about the cultural and the gender issues involved in writing erotica. You just pointed out that these big sellers or these big cultural phenomena have a submissive woman and a dominant man. What do you guys make of that? I mean, and is it possible to write really good erotica with the woman being the dominant?
I hope so. Otherwise, I'm going very wrong. 90%, I would say, of everything I've written is femdom, which wasn't a conscious decision. I just enjoy doing it, I think. You know, writing it, not doing it. Well, you know, I've said it before. If I wrote murder mysteries, no one would think I went out shooting people. So, you know. I think there's scope for all of it. But as Shauna was saying, all these very popular pieces are very similar because people like what they already know.
Right.
They like to have exactly what they used to rewritten in a different way. It's more comfortable.
Right. And so bending the gender, dom as opposed to sub or sub as opposed to dom, that's a little bit more challenging. That's what you're suggesting, Kay?
I don't know if it's more challenging. I think it's slightly more interesting to do because it's less done. But saying that, it is done a lot.
Right.
It's just not so out there.
Not so familiar.
At the moment.
Do you agree with that, Shauna?
You know, I think, yeah, I think that it's a very cultural thing in a lot of ways. And I know that there are people who will be angry at me for saying this, but I do think that what it possibly signifies is that there are a huge number of women through the years who have this interest and this fantasy of submission.
Right.
And so in a lot of cases, what happens is because they have this fantasy, they are willing to read things that showcase what they think that they would like,
uh-huh.
no matter what the quality or no matter what the story, whether or not the story is believable, right? Because it talks to them at this really subconscious level.
Right.
And I think in addition to that, things like femdom and things like, you know, other power play structures are not as accepted. It's sort of like the difference in my mind between the cultural acceptance of being a lesbian and the cultural acceptance of being gay, right? Is that everybody is sort of, you know, if you talk about two women together, there's this much different sort of energy and sexuality than if you talk about two men together. And so I feel like the submissive feminine or the submissive dominant gender roles are very similar to that as perceived by our culture. And so that makes it much easier for a book like this to rise to the top than one in which, you know, many people in our culture would look at a femdom story and feel like the man was not masculine or was being
emasculated. Right.
Totally agree with that.
Absolutely. Yeah. So when does kink become BDSM, do you suppose?
Before I go first, I'm always guessing.
You just go guess right ahead. Then.
I don't see people in the day. I talk a lot. Well, it's really hard. I think in the past, before all this happened, to me, I mean, this is my personal perception. People obviously have their own ideas of what's kink. To me, kink is something that sort of is slightly away from vanilla. And I think of it as fun. Adding, say, blindfolds, light tying up, but, you know, consensual, happy, fun, but, you know, just a bit different.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas to me, BDSM is a shift of control.
And often a lifestyle.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, very much so. One which, you know, I don't pretend to totally understand, even though I write about it.
Mm.
But yeah, I think kink is lighter, but the descriptive boundaries now are lost,
right.
I think.
Shauna, how about you?
I actually have a sort of opposite view of that, and part of that is that I really struggle with the labels that we see again and again in sexuality, you know, and so I feel in some ways like, on one hand, it's really important to have delineated things that mean certain things so that as we communicate, we can understand each other clearly. On the other hand, I feel like so often what we're really doing when we try to delineate the difference is that we're actually putting boundaries on things. And so it doesn't become a communication tool. It becomes a categorization tool. I think that kink and BDSM are subjective depending on who's using them and in what context. So if some people might use kink only to describe sex, whereas some people might use BDSM, like you said, to describe a lifestyle. And for a lot of people, they overlap. And so I think really the really important thing to take away from a book's popularity like this is not, is it kink or is it BDSM, but let's have that conversation about what that means to us each as individuals and make sure that when we're communicating on the same page.
Right. Interestingly enough, my perception is that kinksters, tend to have a different perception about what kink and BDSM is than vanilla folk. And that's just really interesting to me. I mean, what is kinky to kinksters is not necessarily, would be maybe way over the top for, you know, somebody who is altogether vanilla.
I was gonna say, it's so personal.
Yes.
And this is part of the issue I have with when a book has sort of like BDSM novel written across the top.
Yeah.
Well, that might well be to one person.
Yeah.
But to somebody that lives that lifestyle, it's probably just a quiet day.
Right.
That's absolutely a marketing genre choice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What BDSM and kink means on a marketing publishing level is really different than what it means to most people at home.
Right. And you know what? We talked last week at length about the literary value or lack thereof of 50 Shades. And but something that is equally important, and I hear this from my kinkster friends all the time, is that the depictions of, you know, the power play between the two characters in 50 Shades is really bad and deceptive and misleading and dangerous, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I have two perfect examples of that. One is I was recently at Wordstock, which is a convention, and I was on a panel with some women who run sex toy stores. And one of the things that they were saying was that people keep coming into them after reading 50 Shades of Grey, and they want to buy Benoit balls because they're in the book. And, you know, the women at the sex toy stores are saying, you know, these aren't really that fun, and these aren't used the way you think they are. Wouldn't you rather buy a vibrator? And they're like, no, I saw this in the book.
Yes.
I want this thing. And so people are doing the same thing with paddles and other things that, if you don't know how to use them, that they can, they're not really that fun if you don't know how to use them, right? It is the danger of people getting hurt. And in fact, I just signed a contract with Cleus to write a book called As Kinky As You Want to Be, which is a nonfiction book about how to properly work yourself into that lifestyle and have safe, sane, consensual.
Good for you. Good.
Sim sex or whatever.
That'll be really good. I was at the Shush Women's Store in London that sells sex toys, and I do a lot of readings of my stuff there. And they quite often have classes teaching people how to spank, how to use a paddle without losing liver, kidneys. because, I mean, if you do it wrong, you know, it's bad. But I must tell you about a newspaper report in one of our daily tabloids down here. It was like a man's perspective to 50 Shades explaining to husbands what was going on.
Oh, right.
And there was a little warning. It was had me in stitches. I don't know, just because it's me. At the bottom, saying that there's this genuine fear that adolescent boys who haven't had much or no experience will read this book. They're going to find a naked woman for the first time, and they are genuinely going to think that nipples rotate.
Yes.
There are going to be people tuning like radios, and they don't turn.
Yes.
In the book, it's like, you know, like they are on some sort of disc.
Yeah.
And people are joking aside. They are being hurt.
Yeah, it's true.
Do you think
authors have a responsibility to portray stuff that is healthy and not dangerous to their readers?
Well, it's got to be physically possible. I mean, if you're going to type a scene,
but
where,
you know, some
you
people
know,
say, "Well, it's fiction," or it's fantasy.
You know,
so
fiction's great, but you know. If it's, you know, it's got to be physically possible. You can't have, you know, sort of like a limb going at an angle that a limb physically can't go at. I mean, fiction's fiction, and, you know, my stuff certainly is very much fiction. But I do think there's a responsibility to not endanger life or limb.
Right. Shauna, how about you? What do you think?
Well, I do think it's important to get it right. On the other hand, I think a lot of the onus falls onto readers to realize that it is not an instruction manual,
right.
And that it is labeled as fiction.
Nice to realize.
And I think part of that falls onto our culture too. And, you know, and as Kay was saying earlier, if you read a book about serial killers, the majority of the world does not use it as a how-to instruction manual, nor do they assume that the author has written a novel about serial killers that they have done, you know, that they have killed people.
Right.
And I write a lot of fantasy and sci-fi and horror, and nobody ever assumes that any of those things are designed to be instruction manuals. But with sex, there's a really different attitude.
Right.
And part of that is that we don't have any resources, right? So people are using whatever they see as educational tools, and what they're seeing is 50 Shades.
Yeah. Well, you know, I felt, and I think all of us had talked about this when we were doing our individual shows, is, you know, when I was shooting porn, that was in the forward of my mind, is, you know, that I wanted to portray authentic sexual response, and, you know, that really was counter intuitive to the, you know, the porn industry, but that was my thing. I wanted to show something authentic because I knew that a lot of people were picking up sexual cues from the visuals that they were seeing in pornography, and that was a really dangerous thing. And I've heard other people say the same kind of thing. I mean, Kay, you said that story about, you know, women going into a sex store and wanting Benoit balls, or Shauna, that was you, and saying, well, you know, you don't even know how to use these, you know, and, you know, so what's up with that?
I think I also find that, as a fiction writer, my job is not to tell the literal truth, but to tell an emotional truth.
All right, good, good, good.
Uh-huh.
And so one of my biggest pet peeves with stories like 50 Shades actually is that they get the emotional truth wrong, right? And so in some ways that's just as dangerous because, you know, all of a sudden you have all these women reading the story about what it actually means to be submissive and what that feels like emotionally and what that, how you coin that as love or how you coin that however you want to. And then they go and search for that. And the emotional truth of it is that it's a really sort of hollow story. And so for me, I think, you know, yes, I struggle with the physical things that are not told properly, but I also struggle with the fact that the emotional truth feels very hollow to me. It feels like that it isn't there.
Right. Right, right, right. Speaking of which, I think it's time for you, Kay, to inoculate us against bad erotica.
Oh, goodness, me, no pressure then.
Yay. So read for
I'm
us
excited.
From your work.
I've had some trouble choosing. So what I did was I asked people that came onto my blog to vote, as
oh,
it were,
great.
What
cool.
I would read. And I'm going to read from... and it's only fitting, I guess, from my Oysters and Chocolate novella called Not Her Type, Erotic Adventures with a Delivery Man.
There's
yeah,
a story there.
I know, very cliche title. but what, give you a little background. It starts very vanilla, and each chapter gets steadily much, much hotter until... towards the end, it's extremely full-on. I wouldn't say full-on kink, because that will make a mockery of our last discussion. But but it gets quite heavy and hardcore. Basically, delivery man called John, one of his customers, Jenny, they have nothing in common whatsoever, except they have the mutual hots for each other, and they meet for a few minutes every Tuesday. That's it. That's all they get. And I'm about to read their sixth meeting since this totally unexpected relationship's happened and things are hotting up. And this chapter is called Ripped Off. The text arrived at 8 in the morning. 1 p.m., be dressed in old clothes, bra, knickers, everything. I'm going to rip them from your body and then I'm going to... Jenny's internal temperature skyrocketed. What? What's he going to do? Texting fast, she asked what he was planning, but all she got was, wait and see, dirty girl. Shivering, adorned only in an ancient oyster bra and a pair of fading matching knickers she'd fished from the very bottom of her underwear drawer, Jenny hunted through the remainder of the meagre collection of clothes. Dragging a pair of holed and worn jeans and a thinning summer skirt from her closet, she threw them across the bed. Skirts rip easier, but it's freezing outside. Jeans are warmer. And if I leave the belt off, I'll wear my jeans. Choosing a top was easier. Jenny put on a white cotton shirt left over from her days as an office worker and buttoned it halfway up to show a hint of cleavage she was sure John would appreciate. Grabbing her hairbrush, she attacked her hair and with only minutes to spare decided to sweep it up into an almost tiny ponytail. It was exactly 1 o'clock when he rapped on the door. But rather than wait for Jenny to come to greet him, John stormed straight in, pointing at her. Are those your old clothes? Without wasting time waiting for a reply, John took hold of Jenny and propelled her forwards, tipping her up so she was half lying, half propped against the sofa. Her jeans were off before she'd even registered her position, the zip fly torn beyond fixing. Lost in a haze of momentum, Jenny didn't even notice her knickers coming down. But when she found them later, the seams were neatly split down each side as if two pieces of material had never been joined in the first place. How did he know that I always wanted someone to do this to me? The blouse was next. John manhandled her into a standing position, her back against his chest. Jenny felt dizzy as he grabbed the opening of her top and heaved. Buttons flew in all directions as the crisp fabric gave no resistance to his strength, and her bra was effortlessly slapped at the sides, the clasp forgotten altogether. Jenny's mind spun at his erotic savagery as, seconds later, her forehead was buried into the top of the settee cushions. With her knees resting on the bottom of the sofa and one of John's knees firmly angled into the small of her back, she was pinioned in place. The sound of John's belt buckle opening, swiftly followed by the rip of a condom packet, gave Jenny's brain just enough time to leap ahead to what was going to happen next. Then her delivery man grabbed her ponytail, yanking her neck back as far as it would go, pulled it taut, and with his free hand spanked her butt with a single smarting strike. Jenny's cry of surprise hadn't finished echoing round the otherwise silent room when John's fingers found her unprepared anus and opened her up as far as he could. He paused, and she heard him rasp spit onto her fingers, which he delved in and out of her velvet ring, lubricating her. Jenny's stomach clenched as his eager digits widened her. Then with a strangled grunt, he just crashed inside. Screaming in shock, feeling as if someone had inserted lemon juice into her bloodstream, Jenny struggled to hold back the acute burn of agony as her skin stretched to accommodate him. Yet she could still feel her back passage sucking greedily at his length in agonizingly welcome pain. Biting into the soft cushions, afraid her teeth would rip the fabric, she willed herself not to beg him to stop. Instead, Jenny repeated a long-neglected mantra in her mind. You can do this. Any second now the hurt goes away. Remember, any second now something good takes over. Any second. And then it did, and the piercing sting was replaced with a simmering, fiery heat. Scream, filthy girl, he commanded her. You drive me nuts. Finding her voice, Jenny yelled at John just as he had ordered. You are... But she couldn't go on. Spurred on by his utterances, he tugged her hair harder, using her ponytail like a rudder to steer her whole body. Moulded against his chest, shudderingly as he tapped a work-blunted fingernail over her clit, Jenny began to shake. The moment he felt her begin to peak, however, John moved away, denying her the last stroke she needed to come properly. Robbed of her orgasm, Jenny's head swam as her panting body was flipped over so that she was flat on the floor. Disposing of his condom, John began to wank furiously across her heaving chest, and soon a hot fountain of spunk sprayed her tight tits. Scooping up some of the spent seed with two fingers, John brought it to her lips. Jenny gobbled the moisture down her dehydrated throat with a hunger that would have stunned her past self. Presenting Jenny with more, John barely gave her time to swallow before focusing the next fingerful on her mouth. Only when it was all gone did he stop. Then bringing a hand between her legs, he finished her off with 5 firm strokes of her swollen pink clit. Towering over her prone, flushed body, a look of total satisfaction on his face, John refastened the boxers and trousers that had never fully left his legs. None of the other clothes had been removed, and suddenly Jenny realized she hadn't touched him at all. You've been a very good girl today. He bent down and kissed her for the first time. And now, I have to go.
Aww.
Like I say, it starts really, really gentle. And that's only halfway through.
You're such a
so
pervert.
You can imagine where we get to by the end. But that's the one that was voted the favorite.
Oh, dear. That was really good. Good, good, good. So a couple of quick questions as our time is closing up. Does an author need to be a practitioner? And if not, how does he or she get all the kinky stuff right?
I think an author does not need to be a practitioner. I mean, I write about tons and tons and tons of things, both sexual and otherwise, that I'm not a practitioner of. But you need to be, able to do the research. You need to be able to understand, again, both the physical and the emotional truth of what you're writing about. You need to understand your character's motivations. That's a huge, huge one. People say to me all the time, how can you write about, you know, a black man in the South and who's gay? Because clearly I am none of those things. And it's like, I don't write about that. I write about this black man who loves this other man who happens to live in this very small town in the South. And so I think if you understand human nature and you're willing to do the research on the other stuff, you're good to go.
Okay, yeah, how about you?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I mean, I don't practice what I write either. But, yeah, it's all about the emotional journey that your characters go on. If you can understand the characters that you're writing, remember how people sound, how they think, how they feel, how they smell. If you can get the package of your characters right and send them on a journey that you believe in as a writer, as your story unfolds, and for the stuff that you don't have experience of yourself, do your research properly, then that's enough.
Right. So being honest is what both of you are saying is really, really important. I think so too. I honestly do. And if one touches into oneself, I mean, each of us knows something about the erotic nature of humankind because we're human and we have an erotic component to ourselves. And so if we can touch into that, we can go almost anywhere, it seems to me, because that's what it's all about. I mean, the trappings, paddles or, lipstick or whatever it is almost beside the point, it seems to me.
Yeah.
Okay. Kay, you made an interesting point a little while ago about the 50 Shades of Grey being available without adult content warnings in sites, at any bookstore and grocery store even. These books do contain adult content, and you guys wouldn't have this same outlet with your erotica to younger audiences.
No, it's not so much the bookstores, because generally in the bookshops they're still in an erotica sort of aisle or shelf or whatever. They're contained, they're in the same place. People know what's on that shelf, a labeled erotica at the top, and they go. It's the main supermarkets and places where it's disturbing, because as I know, my best friend, when it first came out, she had no idea what the book was about. She needed a book to read. The cover looked interesting. She read the back, sounded fine. And she was well shocked, because she was not expecting what she found inside. And, she'd been leaving it around the house. She doesn't have newspapers, so she didn't know anything about the hype or anything. And she said, I've been leaving this around the house with my two kids. And I'm like, that's not quite right. It wouldn't take much just to put like an over 18 symbol on it or something, if it's going to be sold next to the apples and the bananas.
I actually have a really different perspective on this, and it might be because I'm not a parent. My perspective is that you can buy stories of murder mysteries and women who are abducted and children who are raped and murdered in the exact same places. And so if we're going to put an 18 sticker, I want to see an 18 sticker for a whole wide variety of things.
That would be great.
But and there's this wonderful quote from George R.R. Martin, who, and is it okay if I read it?
Sure,
it's really, So he says, I can describe an axe entering a human skull in great explicit detail, and no one will think twice at it. I provide a similar description, just as detailed, of a penis entering a vagina, and I get letters about it and people swearing off. To my mind, this is kind of frustrating. It's madness. Ultimately, in the history of the world, penises entering vaginas have given a lot of people a lot of pleasure. Axes entering skulls, well, not so much. And I sort of feel like that really exemplifies how I feel about sexuality and its place in culture, is that, you know, for me, it's much less scary to have someone read something about sex than it is to have them reading about rape or pillage or axe murdering, you know, or psychotic people.
Right.
So I kind of don't have an issue with it in that regard.
Right. And I feel similar. I think that, you know, we go way overboard in terms of, you know, trying to protect our young people from sexuality when we don't do the same for violence. Now, if a parent is really stoked about, you know, keeping, you know, violent images away from their children, then I think that it's, you know, perfectly sane for them to do something about, you know, sexual images, perhaps. But, you know, we can't be this schizophrenic in our culture and expect to, you know, people to respond. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, it should be. I feel like it should be all or nothing, though. If you're going to have erotic books everywhere, have them everywhere, and then they were, which would, I guess, would be the idea, they would be so normal.
That's right.
Like the horror and stuff. But because there's all the attention on this one book,
yes,
you can see the teenagers standing around the bookstand in the supermarket, sniggering. And that can't be healthy either. But if it was, it's neither one thing or the other, I think, is what I'm saying.
Yes.
It's there, but it's not open, because it's
right.
Somehow secret or sleazy, or and you know, neither scenario is right.
Right. And interestingly enough, I mean, there are crusaders, you know, in at least in this country, that, you know, get on their high horse about pornography all the time, and 50 Shades, they just, you know, it was, it didn't even register for them. So
yeah.
It was just a very curious kind of thing. So
yeah.
One final question to you both. Are you guys hit up by novice writers for advice on how to write this sort of thing? And if you are, what kind of response do you give?
I've had quite a few. I mean, I used to get them on and off anyway. But since Shades came out, I've had quite an increase. A lot of people assuming that that's out, so it must be quite easy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, there's a, like, somebody even asked me for the formula. What's the formula?
Yeah.
If I knew the formula, I would be a rich woman. But the, I mean, for people that are obviously more serious about it, rather than people that are just obviously trying to jump on the bandwagon and make a quick quid, edit your work, rest your work without looking at it for a while, read it again, and then edit it again.
Right.
And only when you're sick to death of reading it is it possibly done.
Yeah. Interesting. How about you, Shauna?
You know, I've taught for a long time, and I often do panels and conventions and stuff. So I'm used to people asking me, and I do private editing. So I'm used to people asking me about how to write erotica, and I'm actually teaching two classes starting November. So the amount of people coming to me hasn't changed. What I find has changed is that what I'm getting more of is, I can write a better book than that. Will you show me how to do it? and so I think an interesting thing has happened, right, that happens a lot when something that is really mass friendly goes really big, and that's people read it and they think, oh, I could write something better than that. And so people are approaching it with a different mindset, it seems like. You know, I never got that kind of comment or question before. And my response to that is it's super complicated, and there is no easy answer. But what I will say is the most important thing that you can do as a writer of everything, specifically as an erotica writer, is just find your own way. And that's the answer no one likes, because it's not simple, and there is no real way to do it. But you just have to write, and you have to figure out what's right for you. And don't listen to the people who say there's only one way, or who say you can't do it that way, because none of that is true.
Right.
Oh, no, absolutely. And find live a little bit first. Don't come out of school at 18 and think you can write something. Go make your mistakes, get a job, live your life. Then, you know, only when you've screwed up big time have you got something to write about.
Right.
If you see, you know, you've got to have life experience, I think, and the more experience you have of life, I think the more you can relate to your characters. I mean, you know, I'm not saying, you know, don't write when you're like 19 or something, but I think that if you can write whilst you're having your life rather than thinking, I'm going to be a writer and not doing anything else, I don't think that works so well, rather than, you know, having lots of strings to your bow.
Great. Good, good, good. Well, our time is up again. Before we go, I need you both to give us your website addresses. Walk us around a little bit and tell us where we can buy your work.
You can find me at shaunagermain.com. I'm also all over Twitter and Facebook and those kinds of things.
Yes, you are.
And my books are available as both ebooks and print books on places like Amazon, as well as in print in places like Barnes & Noble's and Powell's and other brick and mortar stores.
Very cool. And now, Kay.
Okay, you can find my website at www.kjb.me.uk, and on that site you can find all my published works, and everything's available to buy from Amazon. And over here it would be Waterstones, and in the States it's Barnes & Noble, and any online stores.
Great. And you're also a Twitter girl and a Facebook girl,
I'm a
right?
Twitter girl and a Facebook girl.
Yes.
If you want to follow me, you can find the links through my website.
Good. And that will be in today's podcast posting as well. Listen, you guys, this has been so outstanding. Thanks for making this happen. It was a long time in coming, and we had to overcome lots and lots of obstacles, including, you know, a great time differences between us, but this has been so wonderful and so enriching, and I just am so glad that I have the two of you in my life. Thank you so much.
Thank
you. It was
you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Be well. You. Continue writing, and we will be visiting you in cyberspace until we speak again. Bye now.
Bye.
What a marvelous show. Well, that's it for today, sex fans. I'm so glad you could join me. Our next show won't be until December 3rd, but tune in then for another swell Q&A show and more sex advice with an edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. However, before we go, let me remind you that today's podcast sponsor is Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library. Listen up, buckaroos. Thanks to this amazing technology, you'll be able to watch your choice of smut from the comfort of your own home. With just a little prompting from you, they're going to come gushing out of your computer like nobody's business. Check it out! You'll find a link to this fabulous sex resource right there on the front page of DrDickSexAdvice.com. Look for the tab that reads, Video on Demand. There is no membership fee. This is a pay-for-minute sort of deal. So, your pay-per-view minutes allow you to watch whatever content you want for whatever length of time you choose. Pretty gall darn sweet, huh? And remember, a portion of the money you spend at Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library, educating, enriching, and entertaining yourself, comes back to us as support for these shows. So, knock yourself out. Okay, until next time, remember, sex is good, and good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.